a space where beauty meets authenticity and transformation is not just a possibility, but a promise. I'm absolutely thrilled to introduce you to someone truly special, Dr. Rukmini Vinayaratnam, the compassionate force behind the countless remarkable transformations in the vibrant city of Houston, Texas. Picture this, every curve, every contour crafted with care and expertise, not just by a board-certified plastic surgeon, but your very own cheerleader for self-discovery and confidence. Get ready to embark on a journey where we explore the art of science of feeling your very best self. This isn't just a podcast. It's your cozy corner of empowerment and inspiration. So pull up a chair, pour yourself a cup of kindness, and let's dive into the Confidence Doc Podcast with Dr. Rukmini Vinayaratnam. Welcome back to the Confidence Doc Podcast. I'm here again with Cheryl and Candace, my brilliant patient care coordinators. We wanted to talk about something that we actually see a lot of that isn't really talked about a lot. If you have this, this is really going to resonate with you. And we want to talk about capsular contracture. Let's talk about what naturally happens when you have an implant. When an implant gets placed, whether it's above or below the muscle, it makes a really thin layer of cells that's called a capsule. And if you think about it, it's a medical device. It's what your body does to kind of keep it in that space. It happens just over a few weeks after the implant's there. That's why if you push your implant, it doesn't go over to your back. You know, so you want a capsule to form. But what ends up happening, and this is, I'm quoting national rates. So nationally, about 5% of women will develop a capsular contracture. So what that means is that little layer of cells gets firmer. Some sort of inflammatory response occurs and that gets firmer. Half of those women, it'll have a grade one or grade two capsule, which means if I can feel it, you may not necessarily notice it. Cosmetically, doesn't make any difference. There's really nothing much that we have to do for that. If it is grade three or grade four, and there's only four grades, then it actually can not only become noticeable where you're like, my breast doesn't look normal, but it can become painful. In those cases, we do have to surgically intervene. And so what that means is I have to go back in and I remove the entire implant and the capsule and we have to start from fresh. I probably do more capsular contracture revisions that are other people's surgeries than I do of my own. I would not be honest if I told you I've never had a capsular contracture, because if you do enough breast augmentations, you will absolutely get one, because there are factors that you can't control. We think the reason why we develop capsular contractures is most likely some sort of micro infection or something else that stimulates your body to go into this inflammatory response. So Cheryl and Candace, you guys get the first calls with this. Tell me kind of what people, because people don't always know this term, but what do they describe when they call you? Like, what are they saying that you guys kind of deduct, okay, you've got a capsular contracture?
I would definitely say they call and they complain of hardness, that the implant is kind of riding up, mainly firmness and some pain. And then most of the time it's just in one breast. And so they're like, well, this one feels soft or this one is normal, but my other breast feels hard and it's painful and it's kind of riding up. I mean, I like that look, but it's riding up and it's painful. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you may have a capsular contracture.
I typically don't get the patients that'll explain what they have going on. They may tell me that they're looking for a breast implant exchange. And so I start asking about what they currently have. My first question always is, are your implants still soft? Can you move them? If they say yes, then I really don't have too much follow-up other than maybe my questions of what they're looking to achieve. But it's kind of a gateway to have them start to explain what's going on at that point. And if they can't give me an answer, I may ask the questions. You know, do you feel like they're hard? Do you feel like they look different than whenever they were put in? Do you feel like the implants are sitting in a place where the tissue, your actual breast tissue, may be hanging off the front of the implant? And the implant could be stationary. And when we start checking those boxes, and it could just be one out of, you know, maybe one just feels a little funny and the other one could be firm, that's when we know, you know, this could be anywhere from a grade one to a grade four capsular contracture. And at that point is whenever we'll start talking about remedies that Dr. Redham would probably offer and where we would go from there.
And it's interesting. So capsular contracture can occur anytime. There's some times where I've seen somebody and they're like, actually, it never looked right. You know, when you guys are asking those questions, they're like, well, was it soft? And I'm like, well, actually, it never kind of got thrown. And to me, that's like, oh, gosh, didn't your surgeon kind of point this out? And sadly, a lot of times, no. You know, if someone isn't necessarily complaining or things, oh, it'll resolve, it'll take care of itself. And that's just really not the case. Often, if you had developed this later, so let's say you've had your implants for 15 years, and you're like, now it just started, it's usually a sign that you might actually have some sort of a rupture. Implant rupture sounds like an explosion. That's not what happens. It's usually like wear and tear. And the silicone that's inside the implant somehow gets exposed basically to your body in a way it had been before, and it starts again. It's an inflammatory cycle. So the things that we do to try to prevent capsular contracture, because that's the best way, prevention, right? What I do personally when I put implants in is I never actually touch the implant. I use a type of antibiotic solution, and the implant goes directly from the little container into something called a Keller funnel. This is the smartest idea ever. If you've ever seen on my social media, I did a video showing it, and people are like, that looks like an icing bag. And because Dr. Keller, who did graduate, who went to the same program I did, had this brilliant idea. He literally saw his wife doing icing cake. He's like, So he came up with what looks like an icing bag that we are able to put the implant into. It's lubricated with some fluid and it just slides right into there. So it doesn't touch the skin at all, which is, that's the biggest source of contamination is the own bacteria that live in our skin. It goes directly into its new happy home. I also do antibiotic irrigations before I put your implants in. But the idea is that it's basically coming sterile in the container. It's going sterilely. We just kind of dump it into that and then it's going to your body. So I'm minimizing the risk of you having anything like that. I put everybody on antibiotics afterwards, and I put everybody on vitamin E and singular for 3 months. Again, why put you on an antihistamine and vitamin E? There's anecdotal studies showing that that reduces the risk of it happening. And if you have allergies, it's a double win. So I just tell people if it makes you sleepy, take it before you go to bed. But these are all small things. But if we do all of those things together, I personally think that my rates are closer to 2% versus 5%. It does happen, like I said, if you're doing them enough. But okay, let's say we did all those things, or let's say you went to somebody else and maybe they did all those things, but you still end up down that path of contracture. Cheryl had mentioned, you know, then we kind of start talking about the process. It's not enough to just do the same thing. One, the implant has to come out. Even if your implants are intact, if I put that same implant back in, I guarantee you that process will happen again, especially if it happened because there's bacteria or something in there. You just cannot get it to clear off. Bacteria, think of them as sticky, and they like to stick to surfaces. And if a surface has no blood supply, like an implant, it never really, even though over time you don't really notice them, they never really integrate with you. And the only way antibiotics get to something to fight off bacteria is through your blood supply. And so if it doesn't have a blood supply, those bacteria are laughing at you. And so we have to take the implant out and we need to put a fresh implant in. If you have a grade 3 or 4 capsular contracture, and it is the first time this has ever happened, almost every implant company in the U.S. will give you a new pair of implants. So that tells you it doesn't happen too often. That is a nice thing to know that that's covered in that way. But I usually, what I like to use is something called Stratus. It is a type of dermal matrix that actually it comes from pigs, and that freaks people out a little bit, but nothing pig remains. It is literally a tissue substitute that I put over top of the implant when I put the fresh implant in. What we don't know the exact mechanism, but it seems to stop that inflammatory cycle. I can't think of a single person that we've had a recurrence with if we've had to do that. I put you on those two medications for 6 months. And then I actually put you on a very low dose of antibiotics for about 3 months. It is such a low dose of that antibiotic that it generally doesn't bug anybody, doesn't cause any sort of GI problems and things like that. And you're like, wow, that's a lot, right? It is. But at the same time, that's why we don't do it from the get-go. I also use something called Cosmetasure, and I'm going to let these ladies explain how that helps when we do develop something like a capsular contracture in one of my patients.
Okay. Cosmetasure, I like to refer to it
as your surgical travel insurance. So we include it in every single cosmetic surgery that Dr. Rednum performs. The one thing about CosmetiSure is that if you got a capsular contracture, we're going to know about it and we're going to work on scheduling your next surgery to make sure that we can remedy the capsular contracture. But the first thing we want to do is reach out to CosmetiSure and your implant company. We're going to report on the implant so the implants can be replaced through the implant warranty. And then through CosmetiSure, if it's one of our patients, what we're able to do is reach out to them to have them cover the anesthesia and the facility, because you're going back under for a procedure that unfortunately your body said, I don't want that implant. Well, we want you to be able to keep that. So CosmetiSure is going to pay for you to go back under for anesthesia and facility so Dr. Rednum can remedy the capsular contracture.
And Cheryl, tell them how long that they have from the time of their surgery that through CosmetiSure.
2 years. As Dr. Rednum said, I mean, if it's something that your body is truly rejecting the implant, you typically see it in those first couple months. I would say even weeks following a breast augmentation. If that's something, then you have up to 2 years after your very first augmentation to be able to have that capsular contracture procedure.
And I want to kind of make a distinction a little bit. It's not really your body rejecting the implant. It's simply that like it started this inflammatory process. And so it's actually your own cells that are causing that problem. So we have to stop that process because we've really never had somebody be like, oh, okay, just take the implants out. They're like, no, but I like them. So really what we have to do is we have to intervene and stop that process. And so that's why we use that dermal matrix to be able to stop that process.
The likelihood of you getting another capsular contracture, if you have one, isn't it 90% if you've already had one and we take the implants out and put new ones in?
Without doing any sort of implantation, it may be up to you. There are certainly times where it depends on the cause. So, for example, we had somebody who got elbowed in the chest right afterwards. It was trauma that caused it, not an infection. And believe it or not, we've also had another lady, her son, like she's playing with him and he just hit her in the chest. When it's in that first 6 weeks, trauma alone can cause it. And so in that case, because it was an infection, things like that, we didn't necessarily have to use that product, that additional product. And I think we have a pretty higher than regular risk, but a pretty low risk of it happening again. Most people will elect to do the full because they don't want to take a chance. The other thing is that the implant companies will cover it for your primary augmentation, which means that if you keep getting it, they're not going to keep covering it. So if we're going to do it, we want to throw everything but the kitchen sink at it so that we know that we're getting you that result and then we're not having recurrence.
So what do you say about hematomas versus contracture? Because I get a lot of patients that call, or we get patients that develop hematomas there, and they're like, well, what was the difference between a hematoma and a contracture?
So a hematoma is a super fancy word for I had bleeding afterwards. So it is important that if you develop a hematoma, that it gets cleaned out. So that CosmetiSure we talked about before will actually cover you going back to surgery for me to clean that out. We actually had somebody a couple weeks ago that we had to do that on. It's not something I'm going to sit on. If you have a hematoma and we leave it in place, it will become a contracture. And it's the same idea, is that now we've left something in that bacteria love. There's nothing bacteria love more than old blood. And so it's something that's going to grow and that it becomes thick scar tissue. And again, it starts this whole inflammatory cycle. But if I get in there early and I clean it out, I don't even need to change the implants. Like, they, you know, we certainly wash it, do the antibiotic rinses again, but it's something that you need to intervene quickly on. They know, well, I was told I had a hematoma, but then nothing really happened and there's no intervention with it. Then that's what caused it. I think that's also really important that when I do an augmentation or I'm doing augmentation or lift, I do everything under direct visualization, which means the old technique of I'm going to take my finger in there and just open up that pocket, which if you are a plastic surgeon, listen to this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I do the fast, you know, I'll help people. I do the fastest dog in town. Well, how do you do it so fast? I want to make sure I see everything. I want to make sure that there is not a speck of blood left in that pocket because I know where that can lead to. It's really important that technique plays a lot into it. So if you go to someone, and we're very honest and open about things when someone asks process. Like, have you had complications? What happens? Has somebody died? No, nobody has ever died with us. I just want to throw that out there. But at the same time, it's like, if someone's like, oh yeah, I get like 10% capsular contractures, you should probably be thinking about, okay, is there, what is their technique doing it? And I don't expect a patient to go into that detail with it, but it is absolutely okay and encouraged to ask your plastic surgeon about these things. If you go to the ASPS website, that's the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, they will give you a list of questions for every procedure that you can come and ask your plastic surgeon. And we have gotten people who will bring that list in and like, go ahead, let's start, let's go through it. Because people should feel comfortable with their plastic surgeon, and they should feel like, okay, I have somebody who's being honest with me about my, you know, what they do and their risks and rates. And not everyone uses things like CosmetiSure. It doesn't matter if you have regular insurance, because in a cosmetic procedure, if you have certain complications, your regular insurance will not cover it, because they'll say, well, that's a complication of cosmetic surgery, especially when it's not something life-threatening. So these are small things that you should be asking about in any procedure, but especially with implants, I think it's really important, because now you've added something into the picture with a device. We always go over risks and benefits when we're talking about implants. And it is a long talk, and some people are like, wow, that's a lot of stuff. I'm like, well, especially if it's an implant exchange, I will go through everything. And I'm surprised at how many people will tell me, well, my original plastic surgeon didn't say any of this to me. And I think some of it is that we now just know a lot more, and we now know, hey, this is when you need to come in. This is what you have to do for implant surveillance. The recommendation is 3 to 5 years after getting your new implants that you should get either an MRI or a screening ultrasound. And the ultrasound is actually something new. I could tell you, I don't know anyone that paid out of pocket to get an MRI of their implants. Ultrasound technology has come such a long way. I'm actually in the process of learning how to do my own ultrasounds using that same device that I used to put fat in. That way, if a patient comes in, they don't need to go pay to do something. I'm just going to do an ultrasound and I can take a look at the integrity of your implant. After that 3 to 5 years, they recommend that every few years, then you do an ultrasound, so that way you can take a look and make sure that the implant is doing well. Our recommendation is that while the implant company says that your warranty's up at 10 years, because after that, there's wear and tear that can occur, really, our professional societies say anywhere from 15 to 20 years. And that's where, don't just have your implants and say, buy plastic surgeon. Come and see them. If you want to come see them every year, come see them every year. Make sure things are looking good. Because once you have implants, especially, you have a lifelong relationship with your plastic surgeon.
Another question that comes across when patients call in regarding capsular contracture is my risk higher if it's on top of the muscle or if it's below the muscle?
No, that is an excellent point. People used to always put the implants above the muscle. And then capsular contractures were pretty high. And they said, well, okay, let's look into this. And we do what we do best. We do studies. And then they found, well, if we put it under the muscle, the rates are less. Well, this is all before killer implants were invented. These are all before we really knew that, hey, these are the mixes we need to do to wash out the pocket beforehand. So really now, I think realistically that the rates above or below the muscle are pretty similar if you're doing all the things that you should be doing. I personally think it's a standard of care to use a Keller funnel, put the implants in, but I know people who don't routinely use an implant, a funnel for it. I just don't think there's any reason not to, because if that little funnel can be the reason why someone doesn't get a contracture, I don't know how it's not worth it. When these ladies are answering people on the phone, my answer is like, well, a lot of it depends on what's the quality of your skin, how much thickness do you have to your breast? Because if you have little breasts, then I may not want to put it above the muscle for cosmetic reasons, because I want it to look really integrated. So I may put it under the muscle, not because it's protecting anything, but because it's going to give more of a slope and give a little more thickness up there. I don't really think there is a big difference there, as long as you're using the same technique, whether you put it above or below the muscle. Another question I know you guys get asked a lot is that, well, shouldn't I put it under the muscle because the muscle holds it in place, right? Like, that's not true either. Now, unless you use a specific technique, that there are some doctors like Dr. Holly Wall who does a beautiful total under the muscle augmentation. Otherwise, almost most of us will do something called a dual plane. So that what that means is that your muscle attaches to the bottom of your ribs, usually about the 6th rib. We lift it up there, but it's otherwise largely attached to your chest bone, your sternum, and it's largely attached to where it comes up off the top near your clavicle. So when we're kind of sneaking it in under there, it doesn't have a sling on the bottom. So over time, as the muscle stretches and heals, it's not covering an entire implant. It's only covering maybe 2/3 of your implant, or in some cases, half of your implant. So it is not in any way holding your implant up. It is simply just providing that extra thickness and coverage at the top. If you really want that internal strength, then I use something, I use an internal bra sling. I like to use a type of mesh that actually I make, it looks like a taco when I put it in there, but it just really holds in. Now that mesh goes away over about 2 years. There's two companies and that make it. There's DuraSorb and Galliflex. These are not animal-based products. They're basically both made out of suture material. And so it goes away over time, but what it does is it makes a scaffolding. And so that scaffolding allows your body to grow into it. And so you have something that's really long-term and provides really good support and bolsters that inframammary fold, which is that end point of your breast that's so important for holding your implants there. So the risk of bottoming out, I think, is a lot less. And for a lot of people, it gives them that little bit more perky look long-term with it. I think that those are other little steps that you can take to do that really make a big difference for it. When you guys are talking to people, how do you explain the internal bra?
I explain the internal bra that if you're somebody that I know that if you have, I want to say thin tissues. So somebody that if they're over the phone and they explain to me that they just have a lot of skin and they've probably rolled it all up into their bra at that moment and they have no more tissue. And I mean, I have to say, we kind of hear it all. If that's the case, when Dr. Rednum lifts a breast and puts an implant in, you know, even though the implant may even be partially underneath the muscle, just think of it just as a little bit more sturdiness. And because that it goes away after so many years, I just explained that it's really giving you not only that structure that you're going to hold on to over time, but at the same time also provides a little bit of shaping for somebody that doesn't have it.
Mm-hmm. And longevity.
Longevity is a good word. Thank you.
And I tell people I believe in it so much. I put it in my sister when I did her augmentation. So I think it's a good product. They're actually doing studies to determine if something like that can reduce the risk of capsular contracture, but it's way too early for us to know. So for right now, I think the gold standard is still using something like Stratus. But I think that, you know, the risk higher if you have a lift at the same time as an augmentation. It's hard to say again that maybe there's a little bit more blood during the surgery. So there's the potential for that. But that's why it's also really important that you have a surgeon that's very meticulous about keeping things really, really clean. And certainly everyone's going to be meticulous about sterility. I have no concerns about that. But everybody doesn't feel the same way about keeping things like maybe not as bloody. So again, maybe not the questions that everyone knows to ask, but I think that's part of the point we want to do this podcast is we want people to kind of know, hey, these are things I should ask. These are things I should look for, because they're not things that everybody talks about on a regular basis.
And not things to be scared of either. Yes. That's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what it is and we bring it up over the phone to you and or we let you know that this is something Dr. Rednum could bring up in your consultation, don't be scared of it. That's all. I mean, it's something that I know Dr. Rednum has used for quite a long time and something that, you know, she wouldn't want to use these, I guess you could say, you know, things to use in these procedures unless we knew that they absolutely worked.
And I think that, you know, again, capsule contracture is just not talked a lot about. And one thing that saddens me is that there are surgeons who will do a breast augmentation, and then if they get a capsular contracture, they don't want to deal with it. And, you know, I think that we can all have complications. That doesn't make you a bad surgeon, but it's also our responsibility to figure out how to improve it afterwards. So if you have a surgeon that's just not willing to do it, that's okay. Come see us because we will take care of you. I love challenges. And I think that at the end of the day, contractures are a unique challenge. And I know that they can really just like wear on you. You know, someone who went in to get an augmentation for confidence now just feels like my breasts are hideous or they hurt. And it's just the complete opposite feeling. And I want people to know that there's an option, right? Like it doesn't have to be, well, I'm just going to take these out and be unhappy with how my breasts look. I think that there's a lot of different options and we go through them. But like I said, I generally have this tried and true way based on evidence-based medicine that works really well. And so I'm always happy to see somebody and I'll always be very realistic with them about what we can help achieve for them. So let's kind of, I guess, wrap it up with this one is that, like, you know, do you guys have like one take-home point that you want to give everybody?
For Stratus, my favorite thing to say about Stratus is that in all the years I've been in cosmetic surgery. I have used Stratus in all the years I've been in cosmetic surgery. I have never had a patient come back and say, I have another capsular contracture.
My take home would be notice the signs. And once you know the signs, don't ignore them. If you feel any pain, any firmness, any riding up of the implant, you know, call a plastic surgeon, get someone on the line, get it checked out, because it's very important.
I agree with that. It will not go away if you ignore it. And my big take home point is it's not your fault. You know, don't let somebody make it feel like it's fault. If you fell, you fell. That wasn't your fault that you fell. Don't blame yourself and don't allow somebody to blame you. At the end of the day, surgery, even safe surgery, has risks. And this is just one of them. And if it does occur, there are options. And now you know a little bit more about it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
As we wrap up another episode of The Confidence Doc, I want to extend our heartfelt thank you for being a part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, remember that Dr. Rutnam and her team are here to support you on your journey to self-confidence and beauty. Your story is unique, and it's our privilege to help you create the masterpiece that is your life. If you'd like to book a consultation with Dr. Rutnam, you can visit her webpage at drruthminiretnam.com. Fill out a contact form, and one of her coordinators will get with you accordingly.